Welcome to the Purpose of Your Life podcast. In this episode, the Netflix documentary Wild Wild Country will be discussed. This August, we have our annual Slough United Kingdom Gurmat Samagam, which consists of youth camp, ages 16 to 25, for the second week of August, the children's camp, ages 10 to 15, for the third week of August, and the main camp, for all Sangit, for the fourth week of August.
Waheguru Ji Ka Khalsa, Waheguru Ji Ki Fateh. Hey Simmer, how's it going?
Good, Amitoj, how are you? Nice to see you.
I'm doing well. I was watching Netflix last weekend with a couple of my friends.
You weren't doing Simmer?
I did Simmer in the morning. Okay. That's what I was like, I can watch some Netflix.
I know where all your squats goes.
It's Netflix and chill.
Watching Netflix,
So we were watching this Osho documentary. Did you know they came out? It's called Wild Wild Country.
Yeah, I know about it.
And it had to do with meditation, things like that. So I thought it was pretty interesting. And I remember like it just triggered something for me that, you know, I've heard a lot of Sikhs talk about Osho sometimes when they're relating to meditation. And the whole documentary is about how he kind of pretty much took over this city in Oregon. I just thought it was interesting because we hear about in India, we have these people building their own like little bins and their own little countries and their own little societies. So I want to know more about what he was doing and how that relates to our kind of situation.
So it's interesting because Gurbani talks about what the Gurdwara or Dharamsala situation should be. So like when Guru Nanak Dev Ji went around all over the world, he created something called Dharamsalas. Dharamsalas are essentially places where people would get together, they would do Simran, they would eat together, they would do Vichar together, they would make sure to progress spiritually, and when your teacher would be there, they would go ahead and teach you, right? And, you know, we come from a system in Guru Granth Sahib where you need a teacher, and if you don't have a teacher, a Gursikh to show you along the way, you're going to be in trouble along the way. Very few people have the ability to understand Gurbani without having practical experience. It's not a theoretical thing. It's a real thing. And Sri Guru Granth Sahib, what was amazing about what the gift we got from Sri Guru Gobind Singh in Guru Granth Sahib is that it clearly explains what a good teacher does and what a bad teacher does. What are kind of the insignia of a good teacher and what are the insignia of a bad teacher? And part of the insignia of what a good teacher does is they show you how to see God, they show you how to listen to God, and they show you how to go ahead and become one with God. When you go ahead and you see someone, in the case of like Osho or some of these other people, what they teach you instead, like Rajneesh, Bhagwan, right? These are all the different titles that he had. What they teach you is how to see them, how to listen to them, and how to become one with them. So, you know, like Guru Nanak Dev Ji, when he talked about how to see Nirankar, he never asked for people to worship him. He asked people to worship Waheguru Nirankar. And, you know, Guru Gobind Singh says it very emphatically. He goes, in all other previous avatars asked for their puja to be done, their worship to be done. It was only Guru Nanak Dev Ji and our 10 gurus who asked for Waheguru's darshan to be done. And so when we look at kind of like both, essentially, he was running a guru system, right, where he was the guru. But what kind of guru was he? What the documentary clearly shows and what his life clearly proved out to be is a phony and a fraud. And we're lucky that Guru Granth Sahib gives us the markings of who's a phony and a fraud, and it results in kind of the situation that you saw in that documentary.
So the situation exactly, they were using the word cult a lot, and I hear cult in like these other places where they killed everybody and they just take control over people. So what exactly is a cult, and was Rajneeshpuram a cult?
Okay, so like, so Purin means like the city. Rajneesh is named after him. His name was Rajneesh.
Oh, okay, okay.
Right? The title he used was Bhagwan, which the title of Bhagwan
means God,
right? Yeah, yeah. So basically, he was God to them. Wow. Okay? And like later on, when he got tired with that title, then he moved on to Osho. And Osho, because Gurbani says, he goes, fake people, they always want titles, right? And these titles, they come not from they're like, these titles come as part of kind of people who want to be looked upon as good. Like if you have a title of doctor, somehow then your words are supposed to carry more weight.
Yeah.
Like the word doctor, just because it's there, yes, you have some expertise, but people carry that title so that all of a sudden it's like, oh, they've got weight to the words that they have. So that's one thing. When we look at what you talked about, like a cult, for example, like you will see a lot of similarities to what Gurbani prescribes as things, but how it's actually implemented is completely different. So I'll give you an example. Nowhere in Sri Guru Granth Sahib does it tell you to go ahead and ignore people who discuss what Naam is about, right? It tells you, however, by understanding the definition of Naam, if the people don't define it correctly, run away from that place. If you go ahead and people talk about the Naam, but they don't actually experience it, go away from that place, right? Like, you have to learn how to do the Simran. You have to learn how to go ahead and jap the Naam. But we jap Gurmantar, we jap the name of God in order to get the Shabad and to Naam. And Naam is the sound of God's voice. And there's actually spiritual progress that you will feel. There will be peace that you will get when you do that. Now, when you look at like cultic, like cult behavior on stuff, one big thing like a cult will tell you to do, they'll be jumping Gurmantra. They'll be like, yeah, yeah, do Waiguru or do Ram, do whatever their mantra is. But then they'll criticize you for going to other sanghats.
Yeah.
Like in all the years now, how many years have we known each other?
That's 5-6 years.
5-6 years, okay. Did I ever ask you, hey, Amitoj, stop going to all the sanghats you used to go to before?
No. You told me to go, as long as they're doing Simran.
As long as people are doing Simran, go to those places. But be careful to what you listen to.
Yeah.
So, for example, one of the things like a cult will do is they'll take your money. In all the years we've been together, have I ever asked you for money?
No.
Right? But that's what cults do, right? They end up by charging. They look at people,
yeah.
They size them up, and they figure out how much money can I extract. So they go ahead and they look at your problems. The other thing cults do is they make you break off from your family and your connections to society. So, like, did I ever tell you, okay, you got to leave everything?
No.
Right? Actually, in fact, I encouraged you to study, right?
Exactly.
So, you know, now you're a graduate, you're educated, you're going to be in a good profession, right?
Yeah.
No one asked you for money. No one asked you, like, to go ahead and, like, stop your education. Like, have I ever told you to go ahead and stay away from your family?
No.
Actually, in fact, one time we drove 3 hours to see your sister, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? To make sure that you could celebrate your birthday with her, right? Yeah. So those are the things like a cult will actually end up by doing. And what you have to do is cults, you'll find you'll become poorer, you won't spiritually progress, and you'll find you start hating people.
So they kind of try to separate you out of everyone so then you feel weaker and you're more reliant on them instead of making you into, you know, someone trying to make everyone around you better.
Look, can I say something? There are a lot of things wrong with society. And there's nothing wrong with pointing out the things wrong with society, but there's a way to rectify the way society is. But you have to be in society in order to be do the rectification. And if you don't do it in Gurmat, it's never going to happen, right? Like, I understand, like, there is a big thrill or a big want for people to isolate themselves, live around like-minded people.
Yeah.
But what happens is, you know, the problem is like you're working with people who are also working with themselves. Like, you can't tell me on your spiritual journey you've always been 100% happy with yourself.
No.
You can't even tell me that you've been 100% happy with me even.
Yeah, definitely.
Right? Like, I'm just saying, like, I mean, I don't know, right? So here's the thing. Look, everyone's got ups and downs and everybody's doing stuff together. If you're not kind of realizing that, right, then you're going to be in big trouble. So there's going to be ups and downs, but part of the real challenge is, can you do it in while you're living in society, yeah, not isolating yourself?
Yeah, like they were like all together. It's kind of like a Disneyland for them. They were just kind of like, that's why they were so pumped with their movement. They're living their own little country. They're just, but they're not dealing with the rest of the, you know, 99.9% of the world, all the things that are going on violence. Yeah, all
they
stuff. Were.
You know, there's a difference between users and givers.
Yeah,
they weren't contributing to society. They were just using the benefits of society to make their situation better, not actually contribute, which was obviously the case when you get to like the voter stuff, like when you get to the homeless people with the drugging of the people.
Yeah.
Like if they really cared about people, they would have actively promoted a program.
They were literally just using those people. They were pretending like they were something good, but they were just trying to use them for control.
And essentially you see what a cult does. A cult takes advantage of the people who have. And they throw away people who are have-nots. And one thing you have to look at is, like, how are you basically being used by people? And the other thing you have to look at, you know, sometimes you run the cult of yourself, right? Are you a user or are you a contributor, right, in Sangha? So that's a big factor as well.
So another question I had, actually, I was thinking about it. They kind of briefly go over what they believed or what Osho taught.
First of all, I don't really believe when I looked at the documentary. To be quite honest with you, I don't really think they really covered their true beliefs.
Yeah, because he has so many books. So I was like, how can they?
So the first thing that goes to show on all those books is they all contradict each other. There's a big volume of work that's basically nonsensical if you actually listen to the guy or you listen to any of the lectures.
It's kind of just very vague and just
nonsensical,
like,
right? Yeah. And he basically found things that people wanted to hear. So people wanted to hear, like, oh, it's okay to have a beer every once in a while. It's okay for you maybe to take a drug every once in a while. Just don't be addicted. It's okay for you to have multiple partners, right? It's okay, right, to do all these things. What it did is it fed into these kind of primal things that people feel but are kind of stunts for your evolution spiritually. Rather than understand what Gurbani teaches us, which is essentially restraint of the mind into pleasure is key. Like the mind can enjoy, but it's not allowed to find pleasure in the indriyas. And the indriyas are, you have your basically your motor functions and you have your senses. You are allowed to use them as advisors, but you are not allowed to let them overtake you for sensual pleasure. And that is the biggest thing, kind of where his thing was like, no, he's like, you see a candy, you want to eat it.
Yeah.
Where Gurbani would say, you see a candy, do you need the candy or do you want the candy? And if you don't need it, don't eat it.
It's kind of like, you know, we have to use our swas. And to live in the life, have a family, contribute to the world.
But you have to have a mental restraint to know that your advisors of these Gyanindris and Karmindris, they can't be the drivers of your mind. Instead, what you have to do is have Shabad Guru, which is sound of God's voice, be the driver of your mind. So one of the things is, the reason why we do so much chanting, so like, you know, in some, like if you ask some people say, oh, as soon as there's chanting, that's like a mind control technique, okay? Yeah. Well, of course, it's for you to control your mind, the chanting is. It's not for the cult leader to control your mind. It's for you to learn how to control your mind. But what cult leaders do is they make you mentally weak by making them focus on them rather than on yourself.
Yeah, they don't give the credit to God. They don't give the credit to Waheguru or the technique Guru Granth Sahib's giving us. They don't give the credit to the right.
That's right. Most of them ask you to keep a photo of themselves in there, or some imagery or some feeling they
have. They pretend to bless you. They tell you'll get everything if you listen to me, all this other crazy stuff.
Exactly. Oh, because you didn't listen, that's why you're cursed, right? Yeah, so what happens is that all you have to do is you just have to listen to your voice when you go ahead and you do Simran and you're going forward. Why? Because the point of the Simran is to make you mentally strong. When you're mentally strong, then you can make good decisions. But if you're not mentally strong, then you make bad decisions. You know, if you notice like the worst things, whether it's like you're negative about yourself or you're negative about other people or the worst parts of your life, you'll notice it's because you have doubts in yourself. And Gurbani says, free yourself of all doubts. But if you don't have a mental framework to free yourself out of doubts, you're in big trouble. So part of what the gift of Sri Guru Granth Sahib is, it actually gives you a moral code of conduct to live by. You know, like some people feel that Guru Granth Sahib has got a lot of moral relativism in it. Meaning like Guru Granth Sahib has no way to live your life. It just teaches you about love. No, that's not what Guru Granth Sahib says. Guru Granth Sahib says there is a way to morally restrain yourself through Shabad Guru in a way to do it in Gurmat. You can't lie. You can't slander. You can't gossip. You can't go ahead and do particular things, right? You can't hate people. But these vices, if you will, or these conditionings of the mind are only rooted out when you get connected to Shabbat. Otherwise, these vices will always be with you. If you're trying to make yourself feel like you're good, you know, there's this word called santok. It means contentment. In the old days, there used to be a matrix that the Hindus used to use, like to basically say, I'm content. That means, do I need this thing? Do I want this thing? What's the driver behind it? And then by definition of going through these mental gymnastics, they would say, essentially, I'm a santoki. The thing is, people are always trying to do mental gymnastics to make them feel good around their own moral code. But the reality is, without Shabad Guru, nobody is good.
Another issue I was just confused about is the technique they're doing the meditation. Like, I thought, you know, maybe they're doing breathing. From whatever I heard, my idea in my head was they're sitting around, they're just going, taking deep breaths, things like that. But then I saw this, you know, you explode, like they're saying, you go scream and you go shout and you do all this crazy stuff, then you jump up and down. And then
I'll give you an example. Like, I've been in Sangat before where people have actually jumped, but they've jumped for a different reason. Now, Gurbani says, like, for example, you're supposed to shut down your gyanindris, karmindris, and you're supposed to take your mind into sun.
You're supposed to, like, knock out.
It's supposed to be knocked out, and that's where you hear the Shabad. That's where your mind gets jagat. It's to basically shut off the indris.
Exactly, yeah.
What happens is when people can't disconnect from the pavan, then what happens is they go into Shabad Surti Mail, and their Surti lifts their physical body up. But that's not what was happening over here. People were actually just trying to get some sort of emotional release. And in an effort to get an emotional, like, you know,
are they like tricking their brains, kind of? Like, to release endorphins?
It's tricking their body and their mind. Every time we have a negative thought, it affects our pran. And because our surthi, that means our mind, is so connected to our physical body, what happens is all those negative thoughts have an effect on your physical body. Go around all day, think negative things, and I will definitely, your shoulders will hurt, your back will hurt.
Yeah, they will hurt.
Everything hurts.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, you can sit in Sangha, do Nam Japa all day. You hurt physically from sitting or whatever else, but it's a different kind of pain.
Yeah, it's not, yeah.
Right? Yeah. Like, it's like almost like an emotional release.
Yeah.
Right? And what it means is your thoughts having a physical effect on your body. But if your mind is in Dasam Dwar and you're with Waiguru all the time, what's the effect on the body then? Very little, right? Like, the very little to no negative effects, right? So when we're looking at things, like what they were doing is essentially the reason why they felt so good is because when they were yelling, when they were screaming, when they're doing all these things, essentially all their negative thoughts, all the anxiety they were hanging on to, they were just letting go of. What the problem is if you actually talk to these people, they're chasing a high. They're just like the people who do drugs. Everybody chases the first high that they had. And what they try to do is that first emotional release was so powerful. And if you remember, they always talk about the first emotional release they have on it. Essentially, they were trying to recreate that every time. But Gurbani says, like, your mind, when it goes into Sukkar, meaning your Nijgar, your Dasam Dwar, you will always have that emotional release, but we've got to learn how to cultivate that all the time. And you don't get to Waiguru by screaming. You don't get to Waiguru by crying. Yeah, there are kind of side effects as a result of, like, when you do Simran, you become very vairagi. You start shaking. You start moving around because your mind can't disconnect from the bhavan. But it's different than this, right? These guys, you know, on the outside, they call themselves sannyasis. And by the way, sannyasi is a big term. Gurbani defines a sannyasi. They define a good sannyasi and they define a bad sannyasi. And these people weren't sannyasis. They just dressed up in these orange and red kind of maroon clothing. But they were not sannyasi according to either by the Vedic standards nor by the true Gurmat standards of things. They were just doing whatever felt good to them in whatever pleased their teacher.
Yeah, I think the term they used in the movie was transformation rather than rejection. Like, the old school sannyasis, they did rejection, and they were more about transformation.
But what's going to transform you? Now, Gurbani says the thing to transform you is Shabad Guru. For them, what was transforming them? Nothing. They location, groupthink, echo chamber. They wanted to think, behave, believe in a certain way, and that was a problem. Look, the reality is, like, you're either with Nam or you're not with Nam. Why did Guru Arjan Dev Ji have to die? Why did Guru Tegh Bahadur have to die? Why did the Shahibzadas have to die? The people who were against Nam were the people who were against the gurus, were against their kids. The people who are against Nam, that's not the definition of what we consider Panthik. Without Nam, you can't understand Guru Granth Sahib. Reading Gurbani connected to the Nam makes the mind jagat. Makes you understand. That's why it's called Jagat Jot. This Gurbani, the Siddhi Guru Granth Sahib, has a Jagat Jot. It will wake the mind up when you read and apply what is done there. Unfortunately, for other people, they follow people. And as a result, they're always disappointed because their devotion or faith is in a person, but they'll be still stuck in the cycle of life and death. And Gurbani said, these people that are born as snakes because they love money, and their followers because they didn't India Chugli, because they were taught incorrectly, will essentially just be worms that live in those snakes.
So regarding followers, the main character in the whole story, which they even interviewed her in live, Sheila. Sheila was his administrator, his right-hand woman. And so what was the deal with her? Because when she was talking about him and just talking about when her husband died, that she couldn't handle the grief. She couldn't handle the mental effect it had on her. And they put her to sleep for 3 days. So first of all, I don't know what they mean by putting her to sleep for 3 days. And then a second question is, so if she was in this spiritual awakening, this kind of enlightenment,
why do they have to tranquilize her?
She was talking in the thing, she didn't sound very much in like sage or at peace. She sounded more like, crazy.
You know, obviously she was the villain of the group, right?
Yeah, she planned all the poison, all this stuff.
On one hand, you have to respect how devoted she was to her teacher, right? Like she was willing to go to such extremes, right? But on the other hand, you have to say, well, what did your teacher teach you?
Yeah.
He wasn't teaching you to go ahead and poison innocent people, right?
Yeah.
He wasn't teaching you to go ahead and do all this weird stuff, which it turned out, well, apparently he was instructing her on all that stuff because he only talked to her about that and he was pleased by all of that. So the question is, although Sheila essentially turns out to be a psychopath, right, for basically following blindly without kind of realizing what they were doing, the reality is the person she was following was a psychopath. The ends justified, you asked about cult stuff. The ends justified the means always for them. They always wanted to go ahead. They were above the law. They weren't required to follow the law. They were too good for it. They were smarter than everyone else. The first thing is Gurmukhs always learn how to serve. The second thing is, you do things in a way, yes, you have extreme loyalty, but your extreme loyalty is to Siddhi Guru Granth Sahib, and your extreme loyalty is to Shabad Guru. Yes, you have to, if you don't know how to take the hukam, then you have to ask and you have to question. Say Gurmukh Pyareo, and there's a way to ask. If you're asked to do something and say, look, I don't understand why we're doing this. Is there a reason why we're doing this? What's the purpose behind it? Can you give me something in Gurbani that says that go ahead and we're compliant with that? With what Gurbani is doing? Can you give me an example of how the gurus did it so that we're compliant with the way Guruji has asked us to live our life if you can't take the hukam? So these are the things that we have to go through. It's not so much the actions as it is much the understanding and the mental approach to the things, right? So if you look at it, almost all their decisions were made out of anger. Almost all their decisions were made out of ego. The biggest tell-all was they were doing things for their community, but they couldn't care about the people around them. A Gursikh, when we decided to have a Gurdwara here in Chicago and Wheaton, it was basically, it's a very famous area that's very kind of white, Christian, etc. When we reached out to the community, we didn't say, oh, we're here. By law, you have to go ahead and accept us, right? Instead, we said, look, we want to provide things for the community. the neighbors, the biggest concern of the neighbors is we have a bridge over our retention pond that we own half of. They said, are you going to close the bridge down? And we said, no, we want you to use the Gurdwara facilities. You know, they were like, can we do meetings there? And we're like, of course. They go, you know, or is it still going to be our place that we vote? And we said, of course, we would love for you to vote in the Gurdwara. Because the Gurdwara is really just not for the Sikhs. It's for everyone in the whole community. And then the next thing is, but if you look at the way they ran their city, it was to exclude everyone.
Yeah.
And what Sheila wanted to do was basically execute a plan which showed we're better than you.
And they'd lied. They'd lied their
left, right, and center. Anything to achieve their means. So what is the state of purity of their mind?
So yeah, like Sikhi teaches, you can't do whatever you want. There's certain laws you can't break.
It says Dasam Dwar Rath Karitra Pavan Soji Pai. It says there's a wrath, a rule of conduct in the Dasam Dwar. They go, if you want, you've got to take the Soji, the wisdom Waiguru gives you to navigate the three gunas of Maya. Perfect example. If we take Baba Talarai, Guru Hargobind's son. Okay, he was Satguru too, right? But 8-9 years old, he didn't have the wisdom to navigate Tregun that he resurrected one of his friends. You know, one of the neighbor's kids? Like, he died and he decided, okay, since he died and he's my friend, I'm just going to resurrect him because he was Satguru, so he had that power. You know, but it wasn't the right thing to do. It wasn't that having the power was wrong. It was, why did you do it? Guru Gobind Singh resurrected 5 Singhs to show he was Satguru. It doesn't mean the power was wrong. The purpose behind the power. If you're just going to resurrect your friend because you want your playmate, that's unacceptable. If you're going to resurrect 5 Singhs to show the Shakti that a Khalsa should have and the devotion a Khalsa has to their guru and the power a guru has to their devotee, to their Sikh, then it's a different thing. So does it have purpose or does it not have purpose? And apparently all the things they tried to do was basically to show off. And if you look at the way he lived his life, like, you know, we talk about materiality. Materiality isn't the issue. It's not having Rolls Royces. It's not having whatever. You can have the best of everything, Gurbani says. But you have to have Naam with it. Every single material thing moved his mind, right? From the clothes he wore, to the jewelry he had, to the cars he had, to the planes he was in. At what point was he satisfied? It looked like he had no contentment.
Yeah, so what was with his, was that a big part of his plan, his appearance? Because his hat, his beard, I mean, like his gown. I remember in the documentary, they're talking about how he like kind of, just kind of was floating, like he looked like an alien.
Yeah,
like
because it's just like, costume, right? And that's what Gurbani says, how fooled we are by costumes.
Yeah.
Right? And essentially it was a costume. What we really found, what he was made out of, when it took 6 weeks or 7 weeks, whatever it was, for him to get across the country, is like, no more, I can't take it.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because what happened is, it was just show. If your mind is strong, look, Guru Arjan Dev Ji said, whatever you do to me, it's mita. Guru Tegh Bahadur was put in a cage. Right? It didn't matter to them. Even Guru Gobind Singh's children, it didn't matter to their kids that they were bricked alive. What mattered was their mental tranquility never changed by what was taken away to them or what was given to them. You can live like a king or live like a pauper. It's the same. Like Guru Gobind Singh says, he goes, I have a sukhi roti. I don't have anything. You said you'd send me as your son. Instead, here I'm in this whole mess. Because my love for you is never gone. But the difference is with Ragnish is he had no love for God because he took on the title of God. To him, he was God. And the reality is he got punished in such a way that showed he couldn't deal even with his own death.
Yeah, he wanted to kill himself, right? He
protected. Yeah, I mean, that was the whole essentially it. And that's what
put the plan. Does it mean he was afraid of death or he wanted to deal with death quicker?
My thing is if you feel like you've got to have, like,
he needed control, kind of, like he wasn't...
Look, Gurbani says you have control of when you want to die, right? As a Gurmukh. If you want your swas to be up, if you're in Satguru Vastha, like Guru Nanak Dev Ji wanted to die, bam. He dissolved his 5 elements, he was gone. Guru Gobind Singh was like, I've had enough of this. After they tried to assassinate him, you know, he shot a bow and an arrow and his stitches opened up. He's like, enough of this now, I'm just sick of... the impermanence of the body, and he just rode off and bam, he disappeared, right? that was the degree of control over that they had of death, right? Because they were like Waheguru themselves. They weren't Waheguru, the creator, Nirankar, but they were like their minds and, you know, basically they were like Waheguru themselves, right? Like a drop and like an ocean. They were the same. But in the case of quote unquote Bhagavan here, Rajneesh, right? He went ahead and he had no control over death. He had no say over it. He didn't want to have to suffer because he was unsure what the future would bring. And to him, when things got hard, he always ran away. You know why? Because he was just a coward. When things got hard in India, he ran away from America. When things got hard in America, he was trying to run away to Turks and Caicos. His whole goal was he was just a runner.